Today with Sam Rohr, Barry Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Well, good Thursday to each and every one of you, wherever you might be, out there, up and down the Stand in the Gap radio network. And it's a delight to have you with us, no matter where you might be. We do thank you very, very much for the pleasure of your company. And along with David Kistler and Sam Rohr, I am Gary Dahl. And a lot to talk about today. And I think that the place to begin, fellows, is with the debate, the CNBC presidential debate last night. And wow, even though we're starting with that particular subject, Sam and Dave, I'm not sure where to start with in that subject. Let me go to you, Sam, though, and say right up front, was it an effective debate?
Well, Gary, it was an effective debate if you're wanting to identify the media as being probably corrupted and inept. I would say that was seems to be the overarching walk away from that event last night. The the three moderators were reported by many people as being the very worst of all of them so far. And certainly that's what all the candidates are saying pretty much as they walk away, saying it was a setup, it was a joke. Clearly none of them, they're saying, had any intention of ever voting for a Republican in a primary. So why were they doing the quizzing there for a Republican primary? So that's what I think was a walk away. It was not something that was productive from the standpoint of really shedding a lot of light on the candidates and what they think. And it was turned into a an assault session, more or less, on the process and on these candidates in particular. That's my first take.
You know, the question that I had to follow up on that, and I want to extend it to Dave, and that is, Dave, what do you really think was behind the kind of questioning that CNBC put together? I mean, you know, it didn't seem as though they were, at least from my perspective, it didn't seem as though they were really looking for too much substance as to where these particular candidates stood. But what in the world was behind what CNBC came up with?
Well, Gary, what I think they did is they started meeting, what, weeks, maybe a month or more before this debate, formulating their questions. And I think the questions were merely an outgrowth of who these people are. These people are rabidly liberal. And I think it was pointed out well, Sam commented on it, none of these people are going to be voting in a Republican primary anyway. I think they despise, you know, not only the positions, the conservative positions held by men like Ted Cruz and so on, but they despise probably these individuals. So I think it was just reflective of who these guys are. But it's tragic. It's absolutely, in one sense, unbelievable when the moderators become the news rather than the debate and the people in the debate being the news. You know, something is very much askew when that happens. So I listened to the entire thing. It was hard to listen to. The one gentleman, Rick, I think is his name. I don't know his last name. I mean, he sounded like he was some kind of lunatic. I mean, he was just so over the top in the way he worded his questions and the tone with which he delivered them. It was just absolutely stunning. But I think it turned into something very, very productive. I think it was right for each of those, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, and others, to address, you know, the nature of the questions and to call out the media on it. And I think it's going to turn to a positive outcome. That's my personal opinion.
What kind of lessons, Sam, do you think that other moderators need to learn from this? I mean, you know, there's going to be another debate coming up here shortly, not too far down the road. What kind of lessons can those moderators learn?
Gary, I to tell you the truth, I'm not so sure that the moderators of the most of the general media that have been employed to do these hold these debates, that group, I think, have already compromised themselves to the hilt by the fact of working for whom they're working and carrying the freight for a liberal agenda. They're not given to truth. They don't act as legitimate, objective journalists trying to ferret out the truth. So therefore, those folks don't learn. That's my sense. Now, I mean personal things that they may do that are distractions that when they're sitting there, which I'm not saying any of them were doing that. I mean, those kind of things that they polish off. But this problem here last night was really an honesty issue. It was a journalistic departure from professionalism. They're not even doing what they're saying to do. But I think I think the whole general media itself, as many of the candidates have appropriately said, are a wholly owned. One of them actually said that the media itself is a Democrat pack, and they're working for the Democrat pack. Well, to that extent, I don't know, Gary, that they do learn, because it comes down to an issue of honesty, I believe, at the heart, and I think they've mm-hmm. jettisoned that.
And Dave, having said that, and of course you heard the whole debate, who do you think really did win that debate last night among the candidates?
Well, Gary, I would have to agree with, I think, some of the pundits that made a comment that Marco Rubio did exceptionally well. I think equally well, maybe a tie with him, or maybe a very, very close second, would have certainly been Ted Cruz. I think Ted Cruz's comment about the questions and going back and backtracking and referencing a question that was asked of Donald Trump, one that was asked of Marco Rubio, one that was asked of Ben Carson. I mean, he just laid it out in rapid fire machine gun style and said, this is absolutely a disgrace. And of course, that was the first time there was an audience response in the debate, was when Ted Cruz did that. So I think Rubio probably won the debate. If you were going to try to pick a winner, Ted Cruz was a close second. I honestly don't think that Ben Carson did anything to hurt himself. I don't know that that Donald Trump really did anything to help himself. But I think the two that emerged from the debate, and I see a scenario developing, and that is Cruz-Rubio. That may be our GOP ticket, those two young men right there.
Sam, do you think that the debate is the best way to get information out there as to where these candidates stand? I mean, have we just had too many debates, or is there another way to deal with this?
Gary, I think it's a good question. I mean, generally what people are wanting to see is they're wanting to see a side-by-side comparison. That's what a debate does. If, in fact, it is a debate, but really none of these so far are debates. They're not even set up as an actual debate as a forensic person may understand the debate to be. These are very, very carefully guided commentaries. And so to that extent, you're seeing only very narrow slices. You'd almost have to, but with a team so big, that does complicate things no matter what you say. Having 10 people on the stage is far different than if you had 3 people on the stage. And so the length of time devoted, the amount of time devoted, all of that kind of stuff changes. So, Gary, I think the structure is about the same, but I just think that the questions, the way they're set up, are just not getting at the heart of the issue.
Well, it just shows us, ladies and gentlemen, that we really need to pray that God will give us wisdom to vote for the individual who is going to be the best person for our nation, to lead this nation back to biblical and constitutional truth. When we come back, we're going to be talking about what's taking place in Washington with the speakership of the House of Representatives and a number of other issues that we find on our docket today. So don't go away too long. We will be back in 4 minutes, and I trust you'll be back with us as we continue on Stand in the Gap today from the American Pastors Network.
As Christian financial advisors, we hold a biblical worldview and teach stewardship as a lifestyle. For over 30 years, we have taught families how to apply God's Word to our daily lives. Our 3-day stewardship lifestyle seminars are held in Bible-teaching churches across America. We go far beyond basic budgeting and dig into the meat of Scripture. We believe that principle without application often lead to frustration. This is Roy Russell with the Life Financial Group in Douglasville. We are just west of Pottstown on Route 422. Visit our website or read our weekly blog at thelifegroup.org. There you'll find videos and PowerPoints for our ministry to the local church. In addition to investing and actively managing over $100 million, we prepare hundreds of tax returns for believers around the area. Come in for a second opinion and see how a biblical worldview can positively affect your investing and financial planning. Call us at 610-385-4500. That's 385-4500, or on the web at thelifegroup.org.
Securities offered through Genius Wealth Management, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Deer might be fun to look at, but they can rub the bark off your trees overnight, creating thousands of dollars in damage. Ordinary tree wraps or stormwater pipe can't stand up to deer when they're rutting or in heat. Hi, I'm Jim Saunders, the creator of Tree Armor, the world's first and only spring-loaded tree guard. Tree Armor stands up to any buck, protecting young trees up to 4 inches thick from deer rubbing as well as power tools. It's infused with a natural cayenne pepper scent that repels deer before they can do damage to your trees. It's brown and almost invisible from a short distance. And Tree Armor is the only tree guard made in America, using only EPA-approved vinyl, free of lead and heavy metals found in other imported products. Tree Armor is not available in stores, but you can buy it from the manufacturer at a huge discount. Go to our website, mytreearmor.com, and buy as many as you need from about $3 each. We even pay the postage. That's mytreearmor.com to protect your trees.
History was made on today's date. Stay tuned for an American Minute with Bill Federer.
October 29, 1929. The stock market crashed and America plunged into the Great Depression. President Herbert Hoover, in a nationwide drive to aid the private relief agencies, stated, "Time and time again, the American people have demonstrated a spiritual quality of generosity. This civilization, which we call American life, is builded and can alone survive upon the translation into individual action of that fundamental philosophy announced by the Savior 19 centuries ago. Modern society cannot survive with the defense of Cain. Am I my brother's keeper?"
This has been an American Minute with Bill Federer. For a free transcript, call American Minute at 1-888-USA-WORD.
This new Common Core assignment, I'm supposed to read all about global warming and how we're polluting the air just by breathing. I held my breath 10 times today because I don't want to hurt those poor polar bears.
Oh, honey, don't you worry. There are 4 times as many polar bears now than when I was a kid. You can breathe safely because you're not polluting anything. That's just another government scheme cooked up to tax and control people.
But it's right here in my Common Core book, Grandma. I'll get a bad grade if I say that. What shall I do?
Get Common Core out of your state. If you would make this your one and only project, you could change the country. But we can only make this change if we're willing to stand together. Learn more about federal Common Core and Pennsylvania Core standards and call your representatives today. Ask them to stop the national takeover of education. Go to PARestoringEducation.org or call Richard at 484-678-2236. This message brought to you by Pennsylvanians Restoring Education.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and I also encourage you to go to our Stand in the Gap radio website, which is simply that, www.standinthegapradio.com. And I encourage you to do that, number one, because at that particular website you can correspond with us, but also you will want to get familiar with it in the event that you are away from the radio and still have the computer. You can listen to us there as it provides a link to our anchor station, which is WFYL in the Philadelphia area. So don't be a stranger there. Go there. Put down your comments. We will respond. Somebody from the office will respond to you for sure. That's www.standinthegapradio.com. Dave, you know, I just want to build a bit of a bridge here because we want to start talking about what's taking place in Washington, D.C. with the new Speaker of the House of Representatives and so forth and so on. But as it relates to that debate, that so-called debate that took place on CNBC last night that really wasn't much of a debate, it was a sham in so many, many ways. One of the promises that we've given our audience is that if they listen to us, by the time it comes for them to vote for a president, they will know what the qualifications are for a person to be a good president of the United States of America. And without going into it in too much of a detail, could you just summarize from the biblical and the constitutional perspective what we need to be looking for in a president or in an individual who will serve as the president of the United States of America? Just briefly, Lord. Lord, I called you Lord. I must be praying here a lot today, Dave. I have not elevated you. But just briefly, Dave, I respect you, brother, but you've not yet become God, so don't worry about it.
You need to aim way higher, Gary, is all I would say. But, you know,
the point is, what would the Lord say to us as to through his word as to who what the qualifications of a good president would be?
Well, Gary, from a constitutional standpoint, obviously the man that would be president has to have a commitment to follow the U.S. Constitution, something that tragically I fear we've not had in many of our presidential candidates, certainly over the last several cycles. But from a biblical perspective, again, I'm going to go back to what the Bible says in the book of Samuel. He that would rule over men must be just, ruling in the fear of God. Now, this is a very overarching, very general principle. There are other specifics that we can get into later, but time would not permit that now. But I would say this, Gary, the man that would be a ruler over other men must have a sense of right and wrong, which is what is meant by the term just. We're not using the term, the Bible does not use the term just in the sense that it's used today so tragically. Economic justice, social justice, that's not what the Bible is talking about. It's talking about a very clear understanding of right and wrong. That comports with Romans 13, where it says that governmental authorities are for the praise of those that do good and for the punishment of those that do evil. So a man that would rule over other men, the man that would be president, must have an understanding of right and wrong, and he must rule and govern in the fear of God. And Gary, I would say this, I don't think any man biblically is qualified to serve in the highest office of the land in the United States of America if he has, as we have had for the last 7 years, a defiant attitude toward the true and living God of heaven, which Barack Obama has had. So as we look across those 10 people, those 14 people that are on the stage, we need to look first and foremost for someone who has a healthy reverence, yea, fear of the God of heaven. And if a man does not have that, then biblically he's not qualified.
Sam, you know, by the way, Dave, I appreciate that and I agree with you. But Sam, it's interesting to note that yesterday or the day before, Donald Trump came out and said he's a good Christian.
Well, Gary, as we also know, is that walk is far more important than talk. In the politics, talk is cheap. The whole political area allows people to do polling, to do the inspection of their audience. And if they're not given to a fear of God, as Dave said, if they're not upholders of truth, really holders of truth, and understand that what they say they're going to get an account of one day before God themselves, they will tailor their message to what they believe their audience wants to hear. Now, that happens all the time. That is desperately wrong. That is deception. That is lying. There are a lot of things, but all of it comes back to what Dave says, a fear of God. But so what you look for is someone who is a person of integrity, someone of good character, meaning that they value those things, such as truth and accountability, and really do believe. I think it's impossible for a person to govern properly if they do not believe that they will stand before a personal God one day and give an account of what they do in their position of authority. It used to be, at the early days of our country, that the oath of office read like a doctrinal statement. We've not had that now for obviously a long time, but it shows how much our founders understood that a person's integrity in their relationship, what they believed about God, what they believed about the Bible, what they believed about a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, that these things were all fundamental indicators of how they would perform in office. And you know, we talk about in this program about biblical principles and constitution. Well, you know what? Every person in office takes a constitutional oath. An oath is a promise before God. But if you don't fear God, and if you don't really believe that moral law sits up on top of even over civil law, then what good is your oath? And that's why we're seeing in Washington today Congress that doesn't follow their oath to support the Constitution, a president that defies it. So as Dave said, that is where we start. And so that is a starting point. It's not the ending point, but that's a starting point. And I think that's a good way we could qualify or disqualify perhaps a number of the presidential candidates at this point.
Gary, could I quickly just make an observation? And it was just something that really was underscored today when Paul Ryan was sworn in as the new speaker. It is an amazing thing, and I'm not saying he did this, because I do believe he had a Bible lying there on the podium as he raised his right hand and placed his left hand on a Bible. But gentlemen, is it notable to you, as it is to me, how often we have public officials that are sworn in and they raise their right hand when placing their left hand on nothing? And Sam, that goes back to the point I think you made.
Yes.
Underpinning civil law is God's moral law. And if a man swears into office to uphold the Constitution and to operate in a certain fashion, but he doesn't feel a compulsion to lay his hand on a higher authority, i.e. the law of God, then what is he swearing on? His own recognizance? I mean, do you understand where I'm going, Sam? This is a tragedy. We have people that feel there is no moral law underpinning anything to which they are accountable, and so they can lie with impunity. They can do the things that we see so many of our elected officials doing today, which is govern in a way, like you said, Sam, that tries to lick their fingers, stick it up in the air, see which way the wind of popular opinion is going, and then they will govern that way. That's why they're characterless.
I agree, Dave. I think that you said that exactly correct. You know, as we've talked about in a general sense, why do we get to this point where those who get into office don't do what people expect them to do? And that's something that all across the country, everybody believes that. Why is it? I think what we're talking about, the reason is because we've put people in there who never from the beginning believe that there is absolute truth. They don't believe that there is a creator God before whom they will stand. Our founders, when they put together the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, absolutely did believe that. That's why the signers of the Declaration of Independence appealed to the great judge of the universe to hear the rectitude of their cause. They understood that role. But if we have people in office now, which I think the majority do, who do not believe that, they have made to themselves truth. Truth is relative. Truth is whatever it means at the moment. So you can stand on the floor in Congress and you can make a vote on something that otherwise you would totally disagree with, but under that circumstance you would agree that, well, under these circumstances, it's a political vote. It's something I just have to do to advance the cause. Advance the cause of what? Where's truth come in and factor into this? This is where it comes back to every time, and Dave, you started with it, it starts with a fear of God. This is where we've got to start an evaluation of all of these candidates. If it's not there, they will not, they cannot perform properly down the road.
You know, you guys are right on, and having said that, you know, we do have a new Speaker of the House of Representatives right now in Paul Ryan. What can we expect from him? Can we expect a man of character? Can we expect a man who submits to absolute truth? What do we know about him, Sam, that can give us an indication as to what kind of a speaker he's going to be?
Well, Gary, we already know that Paul Ryan has already been publicly in support of quite a number of things that are really not what conservative Republicans would want, not even what constitutional issues. And he's also an establishment guy, so he's already on a track that would say it's going to be very difficult for him to lead with a firm moral conviction based on truth. It's going to be tough for him to do that.
Well, we'll talk more about Paul Ryan and some other matters that are in front of us here today, ladies and gentlemen, so don't go away. We're going to take about a three-minute break, and then we will be back with more of Stand in the Gap Today from the American Pastors Network right after these messages.
Nurse, set up an IV. And you, her boyfriend, you were the driver?
Yes, doctor, but I didn't mean to hurt her. I only had a few drinks. I was just buzzed.
Just buzzed? Oh, then your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie, I feel great.
She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No, not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Foster.
The Honorable Paul D. Ryan of the state of Wisconsin, having received a majority of the votes cast, is duly elected as Speaker of the House.
And as House Speaker, Paul Ryan says it's time to wipe the slate clean.
Let's be frank. The House is broken. We're not solving problems. We're adding to them.
John Boehner resigns as Speaker and is retiring from Congress. Schools in Cumberland County, Kentucky are back open, closed 3 days because of the ongoing manhunt for Floyd Cook.
Cook's been on the run since Saturday when he shot an officer during a traffic stop in Putnam County, Tennessee, then fled to Kentucky where he was involved in another shooting with law enforcement officers. Two associates of Cook's, Troy Wayne and Katie McCarty, were arrested after a chaotic scene at a gas station in the town of White House, Tennessee, late Wednesday.
Fox News Radio's Tanya J. Powers. Fox News. We report. You decide.
Working for your liberty right here in Philadelphia. Broadcasting freedom shining light throughout the tri-state area. Streaming freedom shining light from Philly to the nations. 1180 shining forth. We are the Freedom Station. WFYN.
From the Pennsylvania Family Institute, I'm Michael Gear with today's Family Update. We've known for a long time now that Governor Tom Wolf is a big ally of Planned Parenthood, which sells more abortions each year than anyone else. He's the first governor anywhere to have served as a volunteer Planned Parenthood abortion clinic escort, and he had substantial help from them in winning his election. So then it should come as no surprise that Planned Parenthood tipped off the governor and provided talking points in advance of those scathing undercover videos that showed Planned Parenthood talking about harvesting and selling body parts from abortions. And as one might expect, the governor announced an investigation, but then in short order announced the case was closed and that Planned Parenthood had done nothing wrong and it would be business as usual. That's why we're continuing to press for a full investigation and an end to taxpayer funding of that dastardly organization. For more information, go to our website at pafamily.org. That's pafamily.org.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's a delight to have you with us wherever you might be, up and down the Stand in the Gap radio network, a part of the American Pastors Network, and along with Sam Rohr and David Kistler, I am Gary Dull. We are talking about what it takes to be a good leader And, of course, you know, we're not just talking about being a good leader in government, but being a good leader in every other aspect of life. And there are many things that take place in Washington now, putting it in this context, that really goes awry simply because of the fact that the proper qualities and characteristics of leadership really are not there in the minds and the hearts and the lives of those who are leading. We talked about the fact that earlier today, John Boehner stepped down as the Speaker of the House of Representatives, and the one who's taking his place is Paul Ryan from Wisconsin, and only time will tell exactly what he's going to do, but it appears as though he may just be another John Boehner in so many ways. When you look at the way that Ryan has followed Boehner since about 1990, you can almost see that we might have a clone there, and I'm just being as straightforward as I possibly can. Their relationship goes back to 1990, when Paul Ryan actually put out yard signs for John Boehner. So, you know, he's looked up to him, he's followed him. So it could very well be that he may be just another John Boehner. But going from that to something else, we know that the House of Representatives has passed a two-year budget deal that really increases spending and supposedly studies Washington through 2017. And I took that phrase, studies Washington, from an article that I was reading. But in that particular budget, we find that the deal that was crafted by John Boehner, despite opposition from the chamber's farm state and most conservative members, was passed. The final vote was 79 Republicans, and that's only 79 Republicans, and 187 Democrats. And so before we go any further with this, Sam, I want to ask you, what does that show? This particular budget was crafted by John Boehner, but only 79 Republicans voted for it, 187 Democrats voted for it. What does this show? What difference are we going to see in the next 2 years if we follow that the principles of that budget?
Well, Gary, one thing, without even getting into the details specifically, the makeup of the vote is something that ought to really get people's attention. Mm. This is a majority Republican Congress. The outgoing Speaker Boehner is a Republican. Theoretically, you ought to get Republican public budgets that look like what Republicans who were voted to go to Washington to control, curtail this growth of spending, to put manners on an out-of-control executive branch, to do all those things that they were elected to do. The vote should, in fact, reflect that. This vote didn't at all reflect that. What this vote said was that this was, in fact, a liberal, big spending, big government budget that was passed by who? All of the Democrats.
Something.
And a handful sufficiently of Republicans. And if you take and you look at the Republicans who voted for it, they will be liberal Republicans. They'll be big government Republicans. So this was a liberal coup. This was a coup for the president. When I look and say, who is giving credos to this budget? It's the Harry Reids, the Nancy Pelosi's, the Barack Obama's. It's none of the constitutional conservatives. Matter of fact, the constitutional conservatives voted against it, and a few of the senators that are conservative constitutional guys are going to vote against it when it comes to the Senate. But so this was a coup. That's without even talking to the substance. This was a problem. This was a gift. This was a gift by John Boehner. And every Republican who voted for it, and I think getting that list of names of the Republicans who voted for it would be, and I don't have it in front of me, would be very, very telling. But this was a gift to the agenda of the Barack Obama administration. It takes off of the table all of the way through the balance of this year, all the way through 2016, takes the entire budget discussion, the amount we're spending, all that kind of stuff, takes it off of the table. The Boehners of the world think it's a great idea. Why talk about controversial things? Gary, this is a big problem, even without talking about the substance.
Gary, what this was nothing less than a legislative pardon. Let me use that term. It was a legislative pardon that John Boehner gave to Barack Obama as Boehner departed the House. That's exactly what this once was. Sam couldn't have described it any better. It's an absolute travesty.
Well, you know, he said he was just cleaning the barn out so that, Ryan could come in there and put in some more manure.
You know what we normally clean out of barns, and that's what this was.
This is what they shoveled over to the Senate. You are right, Gary, and Boehner was right. He didn't give them something that was legitimate, proper. I mean, a matter of substance, they went with a two-year budget here. The Congress passes a one-year budget.
Mm-hmm.
What they have
mm-hmm.
done is they've stepped into the next congressional body, and they've actually usurped one of the most important things of every legislative congressional setting, in that they have stepped into 2017 and done things that were really a part of what that body ought to be doing. There are a lot of problems with this, and I think that we're going to find out as we go weeks down the road the full body of this. Now, we'll see what the Senate's going to do, but I just don't have any thought at all that the Senate is not going to go ahead and just rubber stamp it and send it through.
Almost sounds like tyranny to me. And, you know, what we do know is that the deal provides an extra $80 billion, that's with a B, $80 billion divided between the Pentagon and domestic agencies over the next 2 years. And I think what is the worst part of it, fellas, is that it extends the government's authority to borrow to pay bills into March of 2017. What in the world is with that, Dave?
Well, Gary, again, we could talk, I'm sure, for hours on the negative nature of this thing. But, Gary, the thing I think that bothers me the most about it is what Sam just said, that it takes away the authority of the next Congress to be able to, to set the budget for that particular year by going 2 years. And Gary, that is beyond troubling. And again, it's a gift of President Obama as John Boehner leaves the House of Representatives. It's just unthinkable that he would do this, but he's done it. And what's equally unthinkable is that people would go along with him in it. Mm-hmm. What do you say,
Sam? Can that budget be rescinded by the next Congress?
Well, the next Congress is not going to actually be seated.
That's true, until that time.
Until the beginning of 2017.
That's
so
right. That's exactly
effectively,
right.
they've filled the pipeline for the balance of this year. And it's full of gimmicks. It's full of financial gimmicks. I mean, clearly, you know, what people don't realize is that the Federal Reserve Chairman has said that by November 3rd, which is right around the corner, if the debt ceiling wasn't raised, that they would not have the cash to pay the bills. So there behind the scenes is a threat laying over the head of all those in Congress saying, this is going to be more than shutting down government. You, in fact, could bring the whole world economy to its knees if the United States, which is the only country that has the ability to spend more than it brings in, because we're the only ones who can print money. We print money. But this sends a message. I'm telling you, we will see commentary from those other side of the world who will look and say, already at America, who was already in debt more than any nation in the world, continuing to plow ahead and spend what we do not have. And this is causing havoc in monetary and financial markets around the world because of what we are doing to them. This gets another Band-Aid past a little window here, but this sets up the whole world financial system for great, great havoc, because we are simply violating every principle of finance, every moral principle of spending. And this is what Boehner has done. He's bandaged over this again, and it's not a good thing. Clearly,
you know, ladies and gentlemen, we could continue to talk about this until the cows come home, talking about the barn, I suppose. But you know, let me just be very serious here. If there's ever a time we need to pray for the men and the women in the Congress, in Washington, D.C., in all three branches of government, the executive, the legislative, and the judicial, it is right now. Because when you set aside absolute truth, you can believe and you can do anything that you want to believe and do. And it appears as though that is becoming more and more of a situation down in Washington, D.C. We do know that there are Christians in Congress, and we certainly need to pray that God would challenge them, convict them, and motivate them to begin to stand for absolute truth in the things that they have the opportunity of saying and doing down there. We need prayer for our Congress. We need prayer for our president. We need prayer for our Supreme Court. Listen, let's batten down the hatches and push the throttle down and do that more and more. It's needed today. We'll be back with more of Stand in the Gap from the American Pastors Network right after these messages.
This is Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network, and I'm thrilled to announce that BJU Press, the Christian homeschool curriculum leader, has come alongside APN as a national sponsor of Stand in the Gap today. Together, we share a commitment to further a true biblical worldview and to follow Jesus' command to be salt and light to the culture. BJU Press provides academically sound educational materials designed to fully equip children for college and the workplace. As postmodern culture seeks to eliminate God from the classroom, BJU Press integrates biblical truth into curricula that's accurate, dependable, and exceeds all national academic standards. APN welcomes BJU Press as a national partner and sponsor of Stand in the Gap today. If you're a parent and want to find out more, visit BJU Press online at bjupresshomeschool.com or by calling 800-845-5731. Again, we at APM welcomes BJU Press as a national partner as together we work to instill Christian values in the generations to follow.
Deer might be fun to look at, but they can rub the bark off your trees overnight, creating thousands of dollars in damage. Ordinary tree wraps or stormwater pipe can't stand up to deer when they're rutting or in heat. Hi, I'm Jim Saunders, the creator of Tree Armor, the world's first and only spring-loaded tree guard. Tree Armor stands up to any buck, protecting young trees up to 4 inches thick from deer rubbing as well as power tools. It's infused with a natural cayenne pepper scent that repels deer before they can do damage to your trees. It's brown and almost invisible from a short distance, and Tree Armor is the only tree guard made in America using only EPA-approved vinyl, free of lead and heavy metals found in other imported products. Tree Armor is not available in stores, but you can buy it from the manufacturer at a huge discount. Go to our website, mytreearmor.com, and buy as many as you need from about $3 each. We even pay the postage. That's mytreearmor.com to protect your trees.
The Apostle Paul proclaimed in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 that we must not be sorrowful and without hope like those around us when friends and family who die in Christ go to live with Him in glory. Hello, I'm Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network. In fact, we should not only not sorrow like others who have no hope, we should look forward with great anticipation to the rapture of the church when Christ Himself will descend in the clouds and all those who know Jesus Christ as Savior will hear the unmistakable sound of the archangel's trumpet. Then in that glorious moment, in a twinkling of an eye, all those who having died in Christ will be raised from the graves and we who are alive will meet our loved ones in the air with our Lord and together will live with Him forever and ever. I'm Sam Rohr of the American Pastors Network saying, now this is real biblical hope and change that you can count on. Do you have that living hope?
Join the Pennsylvania Pastors Network at papastors.net.
Pennsylvania Leadership Charter School is an online public school for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Founded in 2004, our mission is to have a school where children can see the world, develop character, promote independence, and become lifelong learners. We teach our students to be leaders, thinkers, and scientists. We are taught to be logical and critical in thinking. Some of our classical teaching methods range from online class lectures to debates to Socratic teaching, which develops the art of speaking and writing. We encourage our students to be well-rounded by participating in sports, the arts, and their communities. Your child can benefit from this style of innovative education. Visit us at palcs.org or call 1-877-725-2785.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website. AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for being there with us, and thank you for your interest in standing in the gap for the Lord. And I trust that you do that every opportunity that you have, where you live, where you work, where you go to school, whatever the case may be. Last week, we talked a little bit about Coach Joe Kennedy of the Bremerton High School in Bremerton, Washington, who was reprimanded simply because of the fact that for a good period of time now, he had been going to the 50-yard line of the football field and would pray. I think he did that sometimes before, sometimes after the game. But he would just have a time of silent prayer. He would kneel before the Lord and pray there. And, of course, exercise what we would believe to be his religious liberty. We do have, by the way, in the United States of America, the freedom of religion. We followed that a little bit last week. We talked about it, if you might recall, maybe at least on two programs. But it's been interesting and sad to learn that Coach Kennedy is even in further trouble right now. As a matter of fact, just within the past day or so, the school board of the particular school district we're talking about, the Bremerton High School in Bremerton, Washington, put Coach Kennedy on administrative leave. As a matter of fact, this is what they say, and I quote, "This action was necessitated by Kennedy's refusal to comply with the district's lawful and constitutionally required directives that he refrain from engaging in overt public religious displays on the football field while on duty as a coach," end quote. Yeah, Dave's laughing. That's what they said. "This action was necessitated by Kennedy's refusal to comply with the district's lawful and constitutionally required directives that he refrain from engaging in overt public religious displays on the football field while on duty as a coach." Dave, I hear you laughing there. What kind of mikmush is this?
Gary, that is the exact opposite of what the First Amendment guarantees him. He is guaranteed freedom of religion, freedom of speech. There is nothing in the First Amendment of the Constitution that requires that he cease engaging in overt public religious display. That's exactly what the First Amendment guarantees him the right to do, is public, overt religious display. How in the world can these people claim to have an intellect and write stuff like this? This, Gary, this is off the wall.
And Gary and Dave, I'm just thinking another thing here about this. That's why it's so far off the wall. Look who's stating this. This is the local district school board, and they are saying that their action was necessitated, meaning somebody's telling them, they say, and that they have a duty to force his compliance. That's what they're saying. Somebody is telling them and giving them authority to limit this coach's First Amendment right. Now, think about it.
It's probably their solicitor, whoever that would be.
Well, it could be, Gary. But see, this is the point I think our listeners probably ought to understand about public education. Public education and school boards are elected by who? The local people. Theoretically, not theoretically, but legally, who does the school board answer to? The people who elected people. Them. Now, this coach had very clearly the strong, very obvious support of the students and the people. This school board steps in and says, we have to take and do something to limit him. By who?
Who said that they have to do that? Well, I'll tell you where it's come from. It's come from unconstitutional entities in the federal government.
Correct.
Who tells
Correct.
Local school districts that unless you enforce really what comes down to ungodly, unconstitutional provisions that limit the right of our students and our teachers to practice their First Amendment rights, we will withhold money.
That's correct.
Way the thing goes. This is what's taking place here. Our public schools are government schools. End of the question. And when you have school board members who hear, again, they've also taken an oath to support the Constitution, just like we were talking mm-hmm. about earlier with those in any other position of government. They have too. And what are they doing? They are violating their oath, which recognizes the right of that coach and every student, the free practice of religion under the First Amendment, if nothing else, and they are superseding and they are usurping the rights of this coach, and it ought to be on the front page news of every page, and it ought to be in the media, it ought to be top line news, this kind of thing where this is happening. But again, gentlemen, probably where are people hearing about this other than perhaps on this program?
Gary, there are five freedoms guaranteed to Coach Kennedy in the First Amendment. Three of those are violated by this directive issued by the school board: his freedom of religion, his freedom of speech, and his freedom to peaceably assemble. If you watch what he does at the end of every football game, when he walks out peaceably to the center of that field at the 50-yard line, takes a knee, and thanks God for safety over those young men that have participated in that sporting event that evening. It is as peaceable a First Amendment act as anyone could possibly exercise, and three of his rights of the five guaranteed in the First Amendment have been denied him by the school board. Gary, this is as egregious a violation as anyone could possibly experience. And Sam's right. This needs to be discussed off the front page of every newspaper in America. It needs to be the lead story on every cable news network, every network television station. Tragically, it's not. People are not hearing about this because people don't want to talk about it, or they consider it unimportant. It's vitally important to the future of our nation and certainly to our religious liberty.
And I want to jump in here because we're quickly running out of time to say that Hiram Sasser, who's the deputy chief counsel of Liberty Institute that we are friends with, said that Kennedy will likely proceed with some form of legal action in the near future. We don't know what that is, but Sasser said that Kennedy isn't asking to lead the team in prayer, but rather for the right to pray silently
yes.
by himself at the 50-yard line. Sasser went on to say, and I quote, "All we're asking for at this point is his ability to pray by himself, silently, and they're still fighting against that. I don't know why they're so hostile to even just a silent prayer," end quote. Well, the reason why they are so hostile is because they are satanic, they are secular, they're demonic, they're ungodly, they're antichrist, and they're unbiblical, and all of that means that they are against prayer. They're afraid that the God that they do not believe in might do something. And so, ladies and gentlemen, I would encourage you to pray for Coach Kennedy. We will do what we can to keep you up to date. But, you know, if you've got children, put them in Christian school, ladies and gentlemen. Don't put them under the jurisdiction of a secular government and the school systems that they put together. Well, we want to thank you for being with us today. It's time for the weekend. We're going to take about a 2 or 3 day break, but the Lord willing, we will be back with you again Monday at 12 o'clock. Until then, on behalf of Sam Rohr and David Kistler, I'm Gary Dahl, saying stand in the gap for faith and freedom. Keep looking up, because we know the best is yet to come. God bless you. Have a great weekend.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler. Brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God.
This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.AmericanPastorsNetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission. Join us again tomorrow for Stand in the Gap Today.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.